We're doing the Ein Yaakov. We're holding on the Daf Chaf Bet in the Gemara Brachot. In the classical Ein Yaakovs, that is page 102. Tanya. We have a Tanai quote. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bteira haya omer. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bteira. He used to say, Ein divrei Torah mekablin tuma. The words of Torah do not get defiled. Now, where does this concept come from? When we were supposed to receive the Torah, so we know that in anticipation of Ma'amad Har Sinai, in anticipation of the great stand at Sinai when we received the Torah, God tells Moshe, Moshe tells the Jewish people, Heyu nechonim lishloshet yamim, al tigeshu elisha. Prepare yourselves. 3 days, don't come near your wives. Every man and woman had to separate themselves. And the idea was that when a man ejaculates, so he becomes tamei tumat keri, he becomes tamei. And a woman, so the seed within her can impregnate her for 3 days. And then we say that after 3 days it's masriach, after 3 days it cannot impregnate her, but for 3 days it could. And so for those 3 days, whenever that seed comes out of her, it makes her tameh, just like the seed coming out of the man makes him tameh. So God said, the men and the women standing at Sinai hearing the words of Torah have to be pure. They cannot be tameh, especially not a tumah that has to do with frivolity. I mean, this is a tumah that's all about lightheadedness. So Hashem said, when I give the Torah, I want the Jewish people pure. On the surface, that would seem to be a one-time thing. Only we find that in David HaMelech's time, one of David's soldiers cut through ice in order to tovel, in order to immerse himself in mikveh waters after he had been with his wife. So we find that this concept of learning Torah, he who wants to learn Torah and pray must remain pure after being with his wife. He has to go to mikveh. This concept stuck. Even though technically it wasn't obligatory, it was considered a midat chasidut. Along came Ezra and his court, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and they instituted many things. They instituted for us the Shmon Esrei, they instituted for us many dinim drabanan, mokze they instituted. They instituted many things. One of the things they saw was that they wanted to preclude, they wanted to minimize the amount of time that people who learn Torah spend with having intimate relations with their wives. They said it's enough that they do it twice a week, that's good enough, they don't have to do it every night, they don't have to do it so frequently. So they declared, they reinstated what was at the giving of the Torah at Sinai, and they said that after a person had been with his wife, he can't learn Torah till he goes to mikvah, nor can he daven, nor can he say Shema, nor can he make a blessing. After a couple has been together, they have to go to mikveh before they can do anything. Now, suddenly, every time a person wanted to be with his wife, he had to factor in another hour in the morning to go find the mikveh, tevel in the mikveh, come out. So then they said, this way at least people will think twice. Otherwise, people, those that would otherwise learn Torah, are spending their nights, they're spending their times too often being intimate with their wives, which is permissible. But they wanted to minimize it. It didn't last. It didn't work. Chazal say it didn't work. This was a gzera that the congregation didn't live up to it. They didn't stand up to it. And so they annulled the gzera. Now, to this day, there's still this concept of limud Torah b'tahara, that a person, those who could, like Maimonides writes about himself, those who could, after they've been with their wives, they go to the mikveh. You see, we have mikvahs. You have in Mishkan Bayvid, you have the Rabbanut mikveh here. Many communities have mikvahs that are open to the men in the daytime hours, in the morning hours, because there are people who do this, and it is considered an act of piety. It is considered a midat chasidut. But our Gemara is telling us that halacha, bottom line, en divrei Torah mikablin tuma. The words of Torah cannot be defiled. A person can be tameh, tumat keri, and if he wants to learn Torah, he could learn Torah, there's no problem. Even though a person was with his wife the night before, so a person should wash himself off once he's clean. So then the halacha is, and that's this that we're learning here, that the words of Torah do not become defiled. Ezra's institution didn't stick. they didn't accept it, the people didn't accept it, and the halacha, what Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira is telling us, is that the words of Torah do not become tamei. Maaseh, story happened, the Talmid Echad, there was one student, Shaya Megamgem Mekore Lemala Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Megamgem in modern Hebrew means to stutter. In ancient Hebrew it means to skip around. He was Megamgem. What he was doing was he'd read, and whenever he reached God's name in the learning, he'd skip it. So obviously he was Tamei Tumat Keri, and he felt that if he reads the rest of the Torah and he just doesn't say God's name, so then he's fulfilling this much. So Amalo, so Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira said to the student, Bni, my son, Petach picha, open your mouth, v'yairu devarecha, and let your words give light. She'en divrei Torah mekablin tuma, that the words of Torah do not become tamei, they cannot become tamei. Shneimar, as the verse says in Yirmiyahu and Jeremiah, halachot v'rich keesh nu'mashiv. My word, God says, is like fire. Ma'esh inam kabel tuma, just like fire is energy. Something that cannot become tameh, it doesn't have. We don't view fire as an object. It cannot become tameh. Af divrei Torah inam kablim tuma. From this comparison, from the fact that the pasuk put them together and compared them, so they're analogous in this sense as well. That the words of Torah do not become tameh. The words of Torah do not become tameh. Now, when we speak about halacha, there are a few levels. When we discuss halacha, a person could discuss something hypothetically with the rabbi, and the rabbi tells him, yeah, I think that will be the halacha. And then a person could ask him, is this the halacha? And he'll tell him, yeah, that's the halacha. And then we could have a situation where a person calls up the rabbi and says, you know, I have this and this situation in front of me. Is the halacha so? Is this what I should do right now? Sometimes when a halachic thought is said in passing, so we say, the person said in passing that wasn't necessarily focused. That doesn't constitute a halachic opinion necessarily. Even when a question is asked and the thought is given, it doesn't have the same weight as when the question is asked in a practical sense. When a story is recorded in the Talmud, just as we just read, halacha lemaaseh, when it says maaseh shaya, a story happened with this student and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira clearly told him what to do. So that gives it greater halachic standing. If we would just have the first part of the Braita, if we just have the first part of the Tanakh quote where Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says the halacha, so that would have one level of halachic weight. When we add the second part of the story, that there was a student who was trying to keep this halacha, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira told him, no, you learn Torah normally, you don't have to worry about it. So that's already moving it another step forward, that gives it much stronger halachic weight. And that's called halacha lemaaseh, or maaseh rab. When we have a story that's a story of a great person, so then we call it maaseh rab, and then it has much greater weight. Sometimes it has so much weight, halachically, that it'll have more weight than the majority opinion. Sometimes we say, what?
Why?
Because it indicates that someone ruled in a practical sense this way. When I say hypothetically, when I say this is what I think halacha is, so maybe the rabbis disagree with me. I think this way, they think that way. So we'll come to account and they'll outnumber me and I won't rule my way. you have different cases in the Gemara where rabbis had one opinion and whenever you'd ask them what their opinion was, they'd say their opinion. And then when it came to practical ruling, they'd go with other rabbis because they said, I'm outnumbered. If you ask me what I think the halacha is X. But I know there are 10 rabbis who disagree with me, so when I give halachic ruling, I'll say not X. You find that even in modern day halacha. I mean, there was a question that they asked Rav Yisraeli, he was Rosh Hashim in Merkaz Arav, about certain things, whether they'd be permissible in a shul. He said, I think they're permissible, but I'm not going to rule they're permissible unless other rabbis join me. This is too big an innovation for one rabbi alone to say. So my opinion is it's permissible, but I'm not going to tell you practically that you could do it. Because if others say it, then yes, those are levels in halacha till today. You could hold in, not you, I mean, Bezat Hashem, every one of you will get to that level. But a rabbi can have a halachic opinion, and that doesn't mean that he rules with that halachic opinion. Make sense? Yeah? So when we quote a situation where he ruled that way, that means that it gives it more halachic weight, because he actually ruled that way. Yeah? Remind me your names. I don't know your names. Your name?
Nathan.
Nathan. And you?
Bill.
Yeah.
What was the particular innovation that was being
Let's leave it for now. We'll end up going on a long tangent. Hayam mitpalel. Now, our Gemara tells us another halacha. The Torah tells us a special commandment. When we go out to war, we have to have a set place where people relieve themselves. God says, your camp has to be holy. I travel in your camp. Even when you go out to war, I'm in your midst. V'ayam machanecha kadosh. And so Hashem says, don't reveal yourself. I don't want people walking around like animals, revealing themselves, going to the bathroom. A person has to keep himself modest and covered. And the person also has to ensure that the place where he goes to the bathroom, he digs a hole, goes to the bathroom, covers it up. So God tells us two laws there. God tells us, one, that our private parts, what's called in the Torah, our erva, should be covered. And when it's uncovered, that's considered a situation where God is not present, or God doesn't want his name present. And God also tells us that our feces, also a person's stool, also has to be covered. A person isn't supposed to leave his stool lying around, and when it is lying around, he should not. God says, my name shouldn't be mentioned there.
Does that mean you're allowed to dig on Shabbat for that purpose?
I don't think so, but I think what they maybe they have a hole before Shabbat, and maybe they cover it.
No, I mean like b'diavad, you know. Like,
so b'diavad, the person should go somewhere else, cover it with stones. I don't
know. So.
I don't think so.
Right?
I don't think so. So our Gemara now is discussing if a person prayed, and after he prayed, he found that his child had made on the floor there. He thought the kid was toilet trained, and then he comes and he finds that the kid made stool on the floor. Now, technically, we say that the second you see stool, if it's uncovered, you're not allowed to make any blessing there, you're not allowed to pray there. You're standing at the subway, you want to pop a candy into your mouth, and you see that one of the people standing there relieved themselves on the floor. So stool, next to stool, it is biblically prohibited to say God's name. It is biblically prohibited to learn Torah, to make a blessing. That's number one. Now what happens if a person urinated? There's a nice puddle there that everyone could smell, comes from something very specific. So then, over there, biblically it's not prohibited, it's rabbinically prohibited. Next to a puddle, next to someone who's actually urinating, that's biblically prohibited. Next to a stool that's lying on the floor, that's biblically prohibited. But next to a puddle, that's only rabbinically prohibited. So, our Gemara over here says, let's say a person prayed. And after he finished praying, he turns around and he sees his kid made a nice little packet for him on the floor there. Hayam mitpalel, he prayed, umatzat shav minkomo, and he found that there was stool right there where he was praying. Amar Rabba says, afal pi shechata tfilato tfila. Even though he sinned, he shouldn't have prayed in a place like that. Nonetheless, his prayer was a prayer. Matkif la Rabba, Rabba attacks, Rabba disagrees. We have a rule that when a sacrifice is brought by a wicked person, God says that's disgusting before me, that's disgraceful before me. We have a rule that it's not enough that you do the action, you have to be fit to do the action. So by the same token, if the place wasn't fit for prayer, so the person sinned by saying God's name there. God says, don't mention my name where there's stool. El amarava oil vechata aval pishit palel tfilato toiva. Being that he sinned in praying over there, even though he did technically pray, his prayer is considered disgusting before God, and he has not fulfilled his obligation. Now here there's more to discuss. The way we rule is that when it comes to stool, so you have to check out the place that you pray that it's clean. Stool is biblical, and wherever there would be any room to think that there would be stool, if you have a kid that's being toilet trained, then you have to check the place that it's clean. When it comes to urine, so there being that it's rabbinic, so again, if you have reason to think your kid just made a puddle right next to you, so check that's not the case. But so long as you have no reason to think there's something there, so by urine we say even if you prayed and then it turns out that you were wrong, you didn't think there'd be a puddle there, and then it turns out you daven Shmona Esrei, you finish Shmona Esrei, turn around and you see your kid made a puddle next to you, so then you were yotzei, then that's okay. We're up to the page Daf Chaf Gimel, the top of Nun Bet in this edition. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Rabbi Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. Yes.
Can you
So is Nathan. Is the issue that your child may, you know, release him or herself before you start praying or during?
Either way.
Either way, it doesn't matter.
If a person sees that there's urine or stool next to him, the person has to pause his prayer and walk elsewhere. Or deal with it, whichever one will work. I mean, sometimes you're the only parent home. You're going to walk away, your kid's going to come following you, right? That's not going to work. So then you have to deal with it and then continue prayer. We say that, let's say you're standing at the subway and you want to pray Shemoneh Esrei and you see there's a puddle there. So you have to go to a place where you can't see it nor smell it. You're not supposed to. Now, seeing it, if it's covered, it's okay. Or you could add a cup of water to it or a vias mayim to one bottle and that's okay.
It's not even a cup, I think it's like a quarter of a cup.
Right, right. Right, this is less than a cup, right?
Blood in the hospital or in a bath.
Blood is no problem. You could dive next to blood. Blood isn't a problem. It's still not a problem. The Torah said, God said, these two things I don't want my name mentioned to. If the issue is, if there's a woman that's dressed immodestly, we're going to see, I don't know if we'll get there today, that the second there's a tefa, a hands width, of a woman that's uncovered, which would include a woman wearing a short sleeve shirt, a woman wearing shorts, depends on how short, but technically once above the knee, and the second you have a part of a woman that's uncovered, so then you cannot say any words of Torah. That's why it's so long as you could see it, you could close your eyes. When I have guests that aren't dressed modestly for a Shabbos meal, sometimes we invite different people, and so I close my eyes when I make Kiddush. Sometimes I'm a guest somewhere. People invite me to their wedding or to their Sheva Brachas, and I have to make a blessing on the cup. How can I make the blessing? So I close my eyes. That's enough. If you could position your head in a way that you can't physically see, even if your eyes are open, that's even better. You're on a bus. You want to learn. There are women that are dressed immodestly. So long as you don't say the words, it's okay. The prohibition, when it comes to immodest dress, the erva, there the prohibition is specifically dibur, speaking. So then you could read Torah, even though there's someone that's dressed immodestly sitting right next to you. That's not a problem. But let's say you don't have that option. You want to eat your sandwich. You want to make a blessing. So then you could close your eyes or you could turn in a way that you don't see it. That's also always good. So those are those two different halachot. When it comes to feces, we say, so long as it's covered and you can't smell it, that's fine. When it comes to erva, uncovered private parts, men do. If you're right next to the shower room, there are people walking in and out in the shower, you're in the mikvah. You can't make a blessing. There are men's private parts covered. So by men, we say the private parts themselves are the problem. By women, we say any part that's normally covered. People sometimes forget this. They want to make Abdullah and their wives are without their head covering. The wives are without their head covering at home normally. Fine. You want to make Abdullah. You want to make a blessing. So the wife should really cover her hair. Yeah. Gil?
Oh yeah, I said it depends on what you consider it should be covered, because I think today like a short sleeve shirt or something isn't considered unmodest. I mean.
So that,
sleeveless is something that's usually covered, because it goes by what's usually covered or not usually covered.
Let's save that discussion. We'll get there. It's at the bottom of this page. Let's save that discussion for there. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonatan. If someone needs to relieve themselves, they should not pray. For the verse says, prepare yourself towards your God, O Israel. So from this verse we derive the person is supposed to go to the bathroom before he comes to pray. If you need to go to the bathroom, go to the bathroom. You say, but the minion's starting to daven. Yes, but you're not supposed to pray when you need to go to the bathroom. So this is part of the cleanliness, the preparation that we have for prayer. We cleanse ourselves as well. So just like we wash our hands in preparation for prayer, we should also relieve ourselves in preparation for prayer. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani amar Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani quoted in the name Rabbi Yonatan. Mai diftei shmo rag l'cha kasher telech el beit ha'elokim. V'kov lishmo amitev taksidim zavach inam yodim nasot ra. The verse says in Ecclesiastes, watch your feet when you go to the house of God, for he is close to listen. Don't be like the fools that bring a sacrifice, for they don't know how to do any bad. So, what does that mean? Shmor ag lecha kasher telech el beit elokim. Watch your feet. That means, that's a clean way of saying, watch yourself from passing air. Watch yourself go to the bathroom before you come to pray. Throughout Tanakh, we know that the Hebrew language is called Lashon HaKodesh, the Holy Tongue. And one of the reasons it's called the Holy Tongue is because we don't have direct words for things that are immodest. We always use terms that are circular. We use terms that are similar. When we say Yaakov's offspring, we say Yotzei Yerech Yaakov, those that were the product of Yaakov's thigh. They weren't the product of his thigh, they were the product of his male organ. But we don't have a word for that in Hebrew. We call it the product of his thigh. When King Saul wants to go to the bathroom, so it doesn't say he went to relieve himself, it says he went to pour out his feet. He was pouring out his feet, he wasn't pouring out his feet. That's why it's called the Lasech Raglav. Lasech Raglav literally means to pour out his feet. So that's a modest way of saying he went to relieve himself. And then King David, you guys know the story. King David was inside the cave. King Saul came to relieve himself in the cave, and he didn't know King David was just behind him. So over here too, when the verse says watch your feet, that's a way of saying watch yourself from passing here when you go to when you go pray. A person should watch himself and relieve himself before he goes to pray. And here we say this is even at the expense of davening with a minion. If a person has to go to the bathroom, he cannot daven. He should go to the bathroom. And after he goes to the bathroom, daven. And if that will be at the expense of minyan, well, so be it. He had no choice. A person should gauge his time, should plan his time well enough that he could relieve himself and still make it to the minyan. But sometimes it happens that he can't help it. He can't help it. Shmor atzmecha shelo techta. The verse, we're continuing to explain the verse. Watch yourself that you don't sin. Ve'im techta, if you do sin, haveh korban lifanai. God says, bring a sacrifice before me. Ve'karob lishmo adibrei chachamim, mitet aksirim zavach, and be close to hear the words of the sages. Don't come to bring a sacrifice like a fool. Amar Rava, so Rava explained the verse, ve'karob lishmo adibrei chachamim, be close to hear the words of the sages. She'im chotim ve'im korban mosim tshuva. When they sin, they don't just bring a sacrifice and walk away saying, I just did a mitzvah today. I brought a chata sacrifice. No, they do tshuva and they bring the sacrifice. Now, ordinarily, why do you have to be close to them in order to learn that from them? Ordinarily, maybe you could see it from afar. So when it comes to doing tshuva, we have a rule. Don't publicize your sins. God says it's a chutzpah. Someone who publicizes his sin, he's indicating that he's not embarrassed by what he's done wrong. A guy walks in and says, yeah, I murdered 15 times last year. Well, wait a second. If you were embarrassed about it, you wouldn't tell anyone, right?
But it's only sins towards God. If it's sins towards people, it's a mitzvah to say, because it's not something that you can be glorified
with. Okay, there is such an opinion, right? Right. There is that is quoted, that chiluk, that there's a difference, right? So when does a person bring a sacrifice? For a sin between him and God, right? For a sin between him and his fellow man, there is no sacrifice, it's between him and him. So when it comes to those sins, the Torah says, be close to the sage, so you could hear what he's saying. Because if you ain't going to be right near him, and even then it's going to be tough, he's not going to publicize what he did wrong. He knows, you're not supposed to publicize it. So you be close to him, so you could learn from him. Learn from him that when he does something wrong, he doesn't just bring a sacrifice, he first does tshuva. A sacrifice without tshuva doesn't work. Part of the deal is that a person says, I'm sorry, God, I did wrong. This is what I did wrong. I'm never going to do it again. I feel very bad that I did it. I'm embarrassed that I did it. So the pasuk says, and Rava explains the pasuk, be close to the sages and learn from them that when they sin, they bring a sacrifice and do tshuva, miteta ksilim, lest you come to bring a sacrifice like the fools, the alti kaksilim, don't be like the fools. Shechotin, that they sin, ve'im korban, and they bring a sacrifice, ve'nosin tshuva, but they don't repent. It's like, I'll see you here next year, I'll bring my sacrifice, you'll bring yours, right? No, when a person brings a sacrifice, the idea of a korban is like the word karov, to bring us close. A person looks at it and he thinks to himself, gee, they're slaughtering that animal. That could have been me. Why is that animal being slaughtered? God, out of compassion, said that I could bring an animal and he'll forgive me. But technically, I did something wrong. They skin the animal and he has to think to himself, you know what? That could have been me. Every step of the procedure till they burn the animal, he has to think to himself, you know, God was very kind to me that he didn't say, I get that. He told me to do something, I didn't listen. So when a person brings a sacrifice, it's supposed to bring him to do tshuva. The verse concludes, Ki inam yodim nasot ra. For these fools, they don't know how to do any bad. The Gemara says, wait a second, if they don't know how to do any bad, then they're righteous people. אלא אל תהיו ככסילים שחוטין ומביאים קורבן ואינם יודעים אם על הטובה הם מביאים או על הרעה הם מביאים. But rather what the verse means is they don't know how to do bad. That means they don't know when they're bringing the sacrifice. What did you bring the sacrifice for today? So he will go and say, I did a mitzvah. No, are you bringing a sacrifice for doing something bad or something good? We have sacrifices that are brought for something good, right? A person crossed the desert. A person was ill and he got better. A person wants to give thanks to Hashem. A person has the Yom Tiv. He wants to bring a sacrifice, Korban Chagiga, Ola Shriya. We have sacrifices that are positive. A person wants to just give thanks or give praise or rejoice before God. So then he could bring a sacrifice. Then you have sacrifices that are for sin. The guy ate non-kosher. He ate chaylev. He ate parts of the meat that aren't kosher. He has to bring a sacrifice. So the guy by mistake, he desecrated Shabbos. He turned on a fire on Shabbos by mistake. So he has a chatas offering. He has to bring a sacrifice for what he's done wrong. So when it says they don't know to do bad, what it means is they don't even know it. When they bring a sacrifice, is it a sacrifice they should be happy about, or is it a sacrifice they should be sad about? Is it a sacrifice that's a sacrifice that stems from good times, or is it a sacrifice that stems from something bad which they did? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says about these people, Ben Tov L'Ray Enam Avchinim, they don't discern between good and bad. V'hem Korban Mevim Lefanai, and they bring a sacrifice before me. How's that going to bring them any closer to me? They don't know what they're doing. And the truth is, we could apply this to prayer as well. You know, there's that famous joke we read in the morning about the different sacrifices that are brought in the temple. So one of the things that are mentioned in the Mishnah is the parim anislafim, the cows that were burnt, the cow sacrifices that were burnt. So a guy walks into shul one day and he sees a man shaking over his siddur and weeping and weeping. So he walks over to the man and he says, "What are you weeping about?" So the man says, "These poor cows, they're burnt. I'm weeping over the cows." So the guy didn't understand. It's a sacrifice that we have a special mitzvah. When to bring this sacrifice? There's nothing to weep over. He thought we're talking about people who are burnt who knows when. No, when we read, the same thing applies to prayer. The person, when he comes to Yom Kippur, he has to know what he's saying. And when he comes to Rosh Hashanah, he has to know what he's saying. And when it comes to every holiday, he has to know what he's saying. Shavuos is coming up. We have to know what we're saying. We don't want to be like the fools who walk in and they don't know which part of the prayer to be happy, which part to be sad, just like those who don't know which sacrifice to be happy about bringing, which sacrifice to be regretful about bringing. Rav Ashi v'item Rav Chanina bar Papa amar, shmone kavecha b'shah shat omed v'tfilah lefanai. He says that the verse over here is telling us that a person has to be careful not to relieve himself when he's standing in prayer. Okay, now we're at the bottom of the page, Daf Chaf Dalid. We're beginning the sugya that Gil mentioned. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak taught tefach be'isha erva. What's a tefach? Hands with, right? So this is a tefach. Hands with. So hands with, when it comes to a woman, if that's revealed, that's considered erva. The Torah says when an erva is revealed, when a covered part is uncovered, then don't speak Torah. Don't speak Torah, don't make blessings, don't mention my name when you have an erva present. What constitutes an erva? So Rav Yitzchak taught us that one tefach, one hands width, that's enough. So what does that mean? So if we say that erva begins with the knee, let's say, right? So if the skirt comes up above the knee, so over here already, that's it. This is a hands width. You don't need height. This is a hands width, right? The second the skirt comes up above the knee, the skirt, the shorts, whatever it is, so this is a tefach, this is a hands width. This much, a person cannot say words of Torah overtly when he sees it. So he could close his eyes, he could look the other way, but when he sees it, that's a tefach. That's what Rav Yitzchak says. Tefach b'isha erva. A tefach in a woman is considered an erva. Lemay. So the Gemara says, wait a second, what's Rav Yitzchak talking about? If it means to take a good look, listakel is to look with intent. So you know, there are two ways of looking. A person can just see. You walk into the classroom, you see who's there, you keep going. And then you could look. What does he look like? Does he wear glasses? What color eyes? Eyebrows? Right? There are two types of looking. There's seeing and then there's looking at. So that's the word li'istakuleba means to take a look at her. So if it were talking, when Rav Yitzchak said that a tefa in a woman is considered an erva, what does that mean? If the what Rav Yitzchak meant to teach us was that it's prohibited to take a look at a tefach that's uncovered, v'amar Rav Sheishat, but Rav Sheishat toras. Lam hamana katuv tachshitin shebachutz. We're up to the next page. When the verse records the different ornaments that they captured from the Midianites, so it records their rings, tabat, etzadat, samid, agil, it records their earrings, their bracelets, and then it records kumaz. What's kumaz? Kumaz is similar to a chastity belt. You guys know what that is? Kumaz is, they used to pierce their girls' stomachs, and then they'd make this ornament which would cover up their private part to ensure that no one else could take their wives. They'd like, and they'd have a way of locking it, and then they'd have some type of ornament that they wore there. So this was one of the things that the Pasuk lists. So the question is, when the Pasuk lists the ornaments, how could you list together with the ring that you could catch off a man's hand, the earring, things that were in the most private area? Why is the Pasuk listing all of them together, the different ornaments that were captured from the Midianites? So this was to teach us a concept, Rav Sheishet says. Lama mana katuv tachshitin shebachutzim tachshitin shebifnim? Why did the verse enumerate the ornaments that are worn externally together with the ornaments that were worn internally? Lomar lecha, to teach you. Kol ha-mistakel be'etzpa ktana shel isha, that anyone who looks even at the pinky, the small finger of a woman, if he's mistakel, if he looks, not that he sees, if he looks, even at the small finger of a woman, kinu mistakel ben koma toros, that's considered weighty, as though he'd look in the most private area. So it cannot be that what Rav Yitzchak was teaching us is that if a tefach is uncovered, you're not allowed to take a good look at that. That's not so. Because you're not allowed to take a good look at a pinky either. If a person's looking because he thinks that pinky is attractive, so he's looking, he doesn't just see it, that's prohibited. To see, well, you could see anything that's normally uncovered. A person's face, a person's hands, a person's feet. Everything that's normal to see, that's permitted to see. We're not talking about seeing. But to look at, so that the Torah says, you're not even allowed to look at a pinky. If a person looks at a pinky, so then technically he's looking at the woman, and then that's prohibited, just like looking at a more private section is prohibited. So that's why the Pasuk enumerated the ornaments that they captured from the Midianites. When the Midianites were at war with us, we captured all kinds of loot from them. So we got some of their jewelry, amongst which were rings, which are worn on the fingers, and also that kumaz, which is an ornament that's on the most private territory. Yes?
Does it differentiate between a single person and a married woman? Wouldn't it be much worse if it was a... So, for instance, if you're on a date or something with a woman, or you see somewhere and you see that woman's pinky, but you're on a date with this woman, so you're planning to marry this woman, it would obviously be different than if you're looking at some other man's wife's pinky, yes?
So, that's a good point. Chazal tell us that when a person is ready to marry, when he's thinking of marrying a person, so then they should take a look once to make sure that the person, they like the person's looks. Look at her. Even though technically, ordinarily we say you don't look at a person, you could see a person. Meaning you could go on a date and you could see the person you're dating all the time. But there's a difference between seeing the person and looking at the person. It's two different things. No, you understand what I'm saying? And that's something which no one can gauge.
Right.
Meaning you and I could talk for 10 minutes looking at one another, seeing one another, and never look at one another. Okay, so on a date, you could sit on a date for 2 hours and you could see one another. At some point, Chazal say, if you think this is going to be serious, make sure to take a look. Chazal said, you know, you can't, Chazal forbade marrying a woman before you take a look to see that she's the type of woman who you'd want to marry. Now, when you're looking at her, what you're seeing is a modest girl, the way a modest girl dresses. But still, Chazal said, a person's forbidden from getting married to a girl, unless he's seen it. Yeah. He has to see that it doesn't bother him.
He said one time.
It says one time is necessary. I don't see why twice would be necessary. If a person is uncertain, okay, fine. Look, no, it happens sometimes. A guy comes back from a date and he says, the girl was great, the looks were terrible. So very often we'll tell the guy, fine, get to know her. After 3, 5, 7 dates, think it over again. Maybe then, after you like everything she has to say and you guys have great chemistry, maybe then her looks will be more appealing to you. And often it works. Sometimes it goes the other way. After he hears what she has to say, initially he walks into the date and he's very happy. And she says two sentences and suddenly he's not so happy. And then usually they go hand in hand. When you admire a person, when you enjoy who a person is, then their looks are attractive to you as well. Think about it. Every person after marriage, a woman, we hope she's blessed, she has children, her looks change. Look at all the old women you see out there. All of them looked differently when they were younger, right? So what do you think? All the young women aren't going to look that way. And how come their husbands aren't looking like...
Maybe the taste gets different when they grow.
Maybe. Okay. So hopefully you build something together. And then when you're fond of a person, so then the looks are... you enjoy the looks. It's, that's usually the way it works. Okay. So we're out of time. We'll pick up. We're in the middle of this. So I'll pick up here next.